This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always early on in the week by Adam Burke. Follow him on social media at Skating Tripods. A little housekeeping with the holiday this week and Matt Eumann's on assignment. And as many of you know, that assignment is being at the Lahaina Civic Center watching the Maui Invitational. We will do Wednesdays with Wes as normal, but we'll do it live from the D, and we will also make that our Week 14 preview podcast. Matt will send in his plays, so we will have those for you, but he will not be on the podcast this week. But without further ado, Mr. Adam Burke in the house. Thanksgiving week. Power rating time. Where do you have Thanksgiving on this in your holiday power ratings?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to say third. I'm a really big Christmas guy.
Me too.
Great, great gift giver. Like
my, are you?
So I essentially grew up in the mall. My mom liked to do a lot of retail therapy, we'll say. By the time I was like 7 or 8, I knew where every clearance rack was in every big box department store. So I've been a very good gift giver throughout my lifetime. So that's a lot of the joy that I get out of Christmas, gift giving. But then one of the, I don't know if I'd say Memorial Day or July 4th, but there's just something about those summer holidays, man, especially when you grow up in a place that's cold like Cleveland. Like Memorial Day, that weekend, it's pretty badass where the weather starts to change. You can, you know, you're drinking outside, you know, grilling, all those kinds of things. So I guess I would say Christmas number one, Memorial Day two, and then Thanksgiving three.
Ooh, I like that. I like the sneaky one. My son was born on the 4th of July, so probably should say that's my number one holiday. But my number one holiday is Christmas. I love it. I love the movies. I love the music. I just love everything about it. I love the buildup. And Thanksgiving's up there. Thanksgiving Day is not like something I'm, you know, I didn't have any traditions really growing up, but I just love the sports around it. I mean, this week, as many of you who listen to this podcast are college hoop fans too. I mean, Monday at Maui was one of the best set of games I can recall. With the Memphis game against UConn, where Danny Hurley loses his mind in overtime, the comeback from Auburn, the comeback from North Carolina. I know this will be dated and, you know, who knows what happens on Tuesday. Maybe you got some stinkers, but yeah, I love the college hoops. I love the football, and that gets us into it. Today, rest in peace, Maction. Today is the last day of Maction. I got to ask you this. I'm putting you on the spot because this is not one of the things I prepped you for, but Kent State historically, and maybe this is more of a question for our mutual friend Brad Powers, but they've got to be one of the worst teams we've seen in recent memory in college football. I mean, this team is just god awful.
They are not good. They're not good at all. And, you know, getting blown out by Akron is a pretty big sign of how bad you actually are. The thing that's crazy is Christian McCray and Luke Florio are actually two really good wide receivers. And that's about it. That's about the only thing that this team has. So the Akron Zips, go Zips, my alma mater, the last 0-12 team, that was 2019. They were minus 309 in point differential, it looks like here. Kent State is minus 326 with one more game to go. So Kent State, I would argue, is certainly worse than the 2019 Akron Zips. So, yeah, it's been a while since we've seen a team this bad.
Surprisingly, Kent State has covered 3 games this year. So, good job, Golden Flashes. You're better than Arizona, Georgia State, Florida State, and North Carolina. North Carolina, 2-8-1 ATS this year. And that leads us into the news that broke right before we went to air on this Tuesday morning, that Mack Brown, after I believe saying at his press conference Monday he plans to be back, North Carolina said, yeah, we thought you were going to retire, so you're fired. And it sounds like Mack Brown will coach this weekend against NC State, as they are a 3.5-point underdog This statement from Mac Brown: while this was not the perfect time and way I imagined going out, no time will ever be the perfect time. I've spent 16 seasons at North Carolina and will always cherish the memories and relationships Sally and I have built while serving as head coach. We've had a chance to mentor and coach some great young men, and we'll miss having the opportunity to do that in the future. Yada, yada, yada. Looking forward to preparing for NC State. So I was actually looking at NC State initially, catching points here in this spot. And with this news coming out, number three and a half, I don't really have a ton of interest in the Wolfpack here. They are, and I know you talked about it a couple weeks ago, maybe you're paying a little bit of a tax with the bowl eligibility bump. 5 and 6 are the Wolfpack. But I actually think you get a pretty good effort from UNC here. So I think this news for me doesn't lead to a bet, but it leads me to holding off looking at the dog in this spot.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of this. I will say I was on North Carolina State last week against Georgia Tech, and they covered with ease. And of course, you know, had a chance to win the game there.
That field goal just missed, man.
And get to bowl eligibility, which, you know, look, I mean, we can have a little sidebar discussion about this now where it's like, does playing in a pre-Christmas bowl game or something between Christmas and like December 29th really matter to these kids? I have no idea, right? If you're a program that doesn't make it to a bowl very often, or first year head coach kind of rebuilding the program, something like that, yeah, I think it matters, right? When you're an NC State type of team, or, you know, one of these other teams that, you know, is used to being in a bowl game a lot, right? There's 16 teams with 5 wins going into this week. North Texas, Virginia, and Virginia Tech, NC State, Kansas, Cincinnati, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Western and Eastern Michigan, who play each other, New Mexico, Oregon State, Auburn, App State, Coastal, UL Monroe, right? If you're at UL Monroe, making a bowl game is a hell of a big deal. If you're at Virginia Tech, that's not at all where you want to be. That you do not want to have 5 wins at this time of the year. So it's just on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the perfect way to put it. And, you know, I had Fresno State last week more as a fade of Colorado State because I thought they were overinflated, and we were able to cash that ticket. But as you watch that broadcast, they talked about the fact that Fresno State really wanted to make a bowl game this year under interim head coach Tim Skipper. Next week, this week, I should say, they play UCLA, where they're, I think, a 9.5-point underdog. So, yeah, I think you look at the list. You know, Michigan State, for example, I think they're probably going to be motivated this week to get a win over Rutgers in the first year of Jonathan Smith and try to get to a bowl game. I have bet Michigan State to beat Rutgers in a Rutgers team that's a little bit banged up this year. It's been a bit of a disappointment year for them. They've already made it to bowl eligibility. How about that finish, by the way, last week against Illinois for Rutgers? So, I agree with that. We'll get to Kansas here in just a moment. But, like, you look
New Mexico, right?
Yeah.
New Mexico, they haven't made a bowl game since 2016. Like,
but I also,
they are going to be motivated.
I'll say this. They'll be motivated. My guy, Timmy Chang, hopefully he's motivated to get me over my win total. But we saw it last year. Colorado State, all they had to do was win at Hawaii at the end of the season. And they were a pretty significant favorite. And it was a crazy finish, but Hawaii won that game. I think Hawaii will be motivated even if they aren't playing for bowl eligibility. But you're right. New Mexico absolutely is going to be motivated. But I do think there's that tax that you alluded to 2 weeks ago on a New Mexico team. Should they be a 2-point road favorite at Hawaii? I don't. It seems kind of like you're paying it a little bit of a tax there on the Lobos, who, you know, to their credit, what was their win total? 1.5, 2? Like, they have far exceeded expectations this year. I mean, this is a team that opened up the year in week 0, losing to, albeit a very good FCS program, but they were a double-digit dog to Montana State at home week 1, and now they're a road favorite in week 14 at Hawaii.
Yeah, I mean, I have them a 4.5-point favorite, so for me, there's no premium. But, you know, again, this has been a challenge for me. Another little sidebar here from a power rating standpoint is, like, I've done these throughout the course of the year. I've done these for the better part of a decade now. And this is the first year where I've kind of looked at it and went, do I even want to do this anymore? because all I'm doing really is pinballing non-elite teams back and forth. And even in some cases this year, kind of moving the elite blue blood programs around, the Georgias, the Alabamas of the world, where they don't have a great data point or they lose. You know, you have to make some kind of adjustment, but then at the same time, you're like, well, shit, the talent on this team, like any week they could go and blow out any team in the country. So this year, like, I've just kind of looked at this and I'm like, I don't even know how worth it this is, right? Because, yeah, you want to try to get some line value. And, you know, I mean, it's definitely something I'm trying to do on Sundays and then early Monday. But, like, these teams are just so unpredictable now where, again, call it parity, call it the dispersal of talent, call it whatever you want to call it. But I just feel like there's so little consistency with so many of these middle to low end programs outside of the elites and the teams that are just the worst in the country. Like, I don't know if there's a whole lot of value in doing it anymore for me.
Yeah. And look, everyone handicaps a different way. There's plenty of people like yourself make power ratings. I don't, I respect people who do. I listen to those numbers. I've been a very more of a situational type of handicapper and seeing, and reading the market and, what was an overreaction, right? And JVT writes a column every week on VSiN.com regarding the overreactions to the market. And we'll talk about those. You know, Alabama loses on the road at Oklahoma. Auburn beats Texas A&M. That market moves 4 points. You know, the look ahead line, Matt Grill on last Wednesday on VSiN Primetime, told us Alabama was a 15.5 point favorite. That was an actionable number. They're an 11.5 point favorite at DraftKings now. So was that too much of a movement, or does that make sense based off of what we saw? And that's what we have to determine, as bettors. So a bunch of things I want to jump into. Another note, just kind of from a quick aside here. We did see a couple of coaching hires. Davidson's head coach is going to Rice. Do with that what you will. The one that I do think is kind of an interesting one, and I think as we sit here, the market is moving, and I might jump in on it. East Carolina hired Blake Harrell. They have removed the interim tag. And Adam, I don't know if Blake Horvath is going to play for Navy. And when he went out against Tulane, they were completely helpless. I think East Carolina, knowing that they've now hired the interim guy to the full-time job, Navy's quarterback situation is very much in the air. Let's be honest, Navy's Super Bowl is still waiting out there against Army. This game, they would never say this. This game means nothing for Navy, absolutely nothing. They can't win the AAC. Their important game is still ahead of them to win the Commander-in-Chief trophy against Army. There's no reason to play Blake Horvath here. I don't know if he will go. He shouldn't go. And I think East Carolina is absolutely the side. So I would pounce on this because I think you're going to see significant movement towards Navy here in this spot. East Carolina. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with that. And look, I mean, these are things that, you have to consider this week and things that we don't really know, right? I mean, we can say that we fully expect, Navy being a service academy, right? Kids that are extremely disciplined, all that kind of thing. We can sit here and say that you would think that a program like that would never, punt on a game or be less interested in a game, something like that. But it is a very real possibility this week for all the reasons that you outlined. I think about a game like UAB in Charlotte, right? Where Charlotte got rid of Biff Poggi. Seems like the players were kind of upset about it. It's not like the team is having a good season or anything like that. And for UAB, we've just all kind of assumed that they're going to move on from this whole Trent Dilfer situation, which has been, pretty much an abject failure, especially when you see what Bryant Vincent is doing down at Louisiana Monroe. And then all of a sudden last week, UAB just pummels Rice 40-14, like out of nowhere. A Rice team that was actually playing pretty well, despite letting Mike Blumgren go earlier this season. So all these things are a challenge, right? I mean, you think about Tulsa. They're letting Kevin Wilson go and not like they're playing for anything, but now they're playing an FAU team that already let Tom Herman go. So the AAC this week is just a mess of a conference because you've got a bunch of coaching openings and this doesn't have any bearing on handicapping week 14 here, But you see things like North Carolina moving on for Mack Brown around the same time that you see G.J. Kinney signing a massive extension at Texas State. And I'm kind of confused with what the landscape of coaching is in college football right now. Because, like, if you're Kinney, don't you want to move up from Texas State? Like, I'm sure you can get out of that contract, right? It's not that big of a deal. These agents are really good at doing this, but I don't know. I feel like you'd be one of the most sought after guys when there's a lot of interesting openings available.
Yeah. And, you know, with that being said, you do have also the spot where it just may just make the buyout a little bit better. Are you protecting Texas State more? Right. So that also could be different too, knowing that you're going to be poached and you get your side a little bit more money if you were to get bought out. But I haven't tweeted this out and this makes me laugh. And we're recording this on Tuesday morning. I don't know where Arizona State's ultimately going to be in the playoff rankings, but right now, Arizona State, and shouts to Kenny Dillingham. He's done an amazing job in his second year down there at Arizona State. Think about where we were in September. Arizona State went off as a 3-point underdog at Texas State, and they are now in the driver's seat to win the Big 12. Like, it's just, to your point, college football is crazy this year.
I mean, I saw a tweet from our old pal, former VSiN host Jeff Parles, basically saying, like, Kansas is the best team in the Big 12 right now. And I don't know if I fully agree with that, but I understand where he's coming from. That, like, all of a sudden, this Kansas team, it's knocked off BYU and Colorado in consecutive weeks that couldn't win a close game early in the season. Like, now all of a sudden, they're playing at an extremely high level. And, of course, one of those teams knocking on the door of bowl eligibility here this week with 5 wins. So, you know, the ebbs and flows of the season, you know, teams figuring it out, teams maybe starting out overachieving, right, and kind of falling back to the pack a little bit. Yeah, it's just, it's crazy, right? I mean, and then you have to think about it, too, of, you know, and I think this is an area where somebody like Brad, who does his own power ratings, Brad Powers, of course, he goes back and regrades all the performances, right? That's not really something that I do. But you think about some of these teams, you think about how the wins that they've had throughout the season are aging. And, like, does it matter what they did for a game in week two? Like, oh, you could say, oh, that win's getting better, like the Kansas game, right? Oh, the Kansas win's getting so much better for UNLV week after week after week. But this far removed from it, does it matter at all? You know, I don't know, just because of the Jekyll and Hyde nature of
some of these teams. Well, UNLV would like to say that Kansas win has aged well. No, it's,
well, I mean, that's a huge question, right? If UNLV does happen to beat Boise State.
Which, by the way, thank you.
Do they jump to Tulane?
Thank you to Fresno State for doing the good Lord's work and knocking off Colorado State. You know, Jay Norvell, congratulations on a good year. You're going to a bowl game. I'm happy for you. But we deserve UNLV Boise State. That would not have been competitive. And I'll say this, man, Boise State, they kind of look a little to be had, might I?
Yeah, they do. I wrote about this, actually. I would have had Boise State, by my numbers, a 17.5-point favorite against Colorado State. I have them a 4.5-point favorite against UNLV. Now, I think the number's higher than that because they were a 4-point favorite here at Allegiant. So the number's probably higher than that. Probably 6.5, maybe, I would think, in the market, maybe 7. But still, just, I mean, it's at least a 2-score difference between Colorado State and UNLV. So, yes, thank you, Fresno State.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's a lot of curiosity. All right, one last thing before we hit a break. On the other side of the break, I do want to get into Indiana and Ohio State. I'm good. I'm not going to rant about Ryan Day going in victory formation and shoving it into the end zone, not getting it the first time, and then, you know, doing it again to get the over in that game. But I do want to mention this. So Kansas has been the slayer, right? Has been the grim reaper in the Big 12. Iowa State, then it was BYU, then it was Colorado. And yeah, I don't fully agree with Jeff's take, but I understand where he's coming from. This was one of the we've talked about a bunch on this podcast. We were all on Kansas against BYU. Matt Eumanns, shouts to him. He's been going back to the well three straight weeks. They're at Baylor this week. They're 5-6. They got to be ultra motivated to try to get to bowl eligibility, and what a comeback that would be. But are you paying too much of a tax now against BYU? The fact that they are, I believe, what, a pick'em in that game now? So you've seen market come in. No, Kansas is now the favorite. Wow. So you've seen a flip of favorites in that 1.5-2 now. So money clearly coming in on Kansas with the belief that they will wrap up this 4-game winning streak and get to bowl eligibility.
Well, if you remember, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about Dave Aranda being fired.
Oh, preseason, it was like, how long does he make it? And they've
ripped off 5 wins in a row.
Yeah.
And they're a home dog to Kansas now. And again, I will admit, I mean, my number is Kansas -2.5 from a power rating standpoint. So this has moved towards my line. This is a line move that I do agree with. But yeah, I mean, it's over the last 5 weeks, Baylor's really done nothing wrong, right? I mean, they beat Houston, a team that just beat Kansas State. They beat West Virginia, a team that just got bowl eligible by beating UCF last week. And, you know, I don't know what the hell is going on with my X, Twitter, whatever algorithm. But all of a sudden, I'm getting a bunch of West Virginia football stuff in my For You tab. And I don't really know why. But like, Neil Brown looked miserable on the field with his family after they win that game to become bowl eligible. And then now they're on the road at Texas Tech here this week. But like, did somebody tell him that he's fired and he's just a dead man walking? Like, there's so many of these weird ass things at the end of the year that I don't really know what to think about them. But to get back to Kansas and Baylor, I mean, is Kansas just playing that well, or are we paying some kind of tax on this team?
I think it's a
fair question.
I think they are playing well, but should they be a road favorite? Like, you know, early bird gets the worm. I was able to get Kansas earlier this week at even money on the money line, and now you're paying a little extra on that. Not that it's a massive difference, and I know the pro bettors would beg to disagree over the time if you're paying extra juice. Of course, I'm not stupid, but yeah, I like Kansas here in this spot, but you know, am I crazy about the number now? No, not necessarily. All right, let's take a break, Adam, because I want to get your thoughts on your Buckeyes coming off of their win of Indiana. Was it more impressive by Ohio State or more disappointing and eye-opening regarding Indiana? And also the body blow theory when you face Notre Dame. What does that mean for Army this week against UT San Antonio? We'll hit that on the other side. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. As always, we saw another 5-star review come in this week. Thank you very much. It really helps out the podcast. So please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. And I'll say this, Adam. You know, as you go around the Thanksgiving table and say what you're thankful for, just remind folks of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I don't think it's that crazy and that outrageous of a request. Just, you know, when you're with Uncle Bob, say, hey, Bob, have you heard about the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast? Let's pump up those numbers, you know, over Thanksgiving when you're with family and friends. I don't think it's that crazy of a request.
I think it's certainly a good diversion from talking about what happened earlier this month with the election.
Of course. Right?
You know, Uncle Bob starts going off one way or the other, and you go, hey, I know this great sports betting podcast you can listen to.
Yeah, did you hear them talking about East Carolina and all this other stuff this week? Man, those guys know their stuff. All right.
Just wait. If we at some point do a college basketball one,
oh, baby,
with the teams that I like to talk about, we'll really have people like, what the fuck is going on with this show?
Well, let's get into a team that, you know, I feel like you have a love-hate relationship with. That's Ohio State, and they get the win. They get the cover. I'm still frustrated that the under didn't come home. And I have to go back and listen, because I joked the humans on the Thursday pod, because when Penn State played Ohio State, my official play was first half under. If you recall, there was a pick six in the first half, and the first half over hit, and the full game under was an easy winner. So I joked the humans when I gave out the full game under, you know what's going to happen. The first half under is going to hit and the full game over is going to hit. And that's exactly what happened. And there's a lot of things about this game where obviously, you know, I could bitch about my bet not coming home and whatever. I mean, no one really cares, but I hope maybe people tailed it and you're frustrated too. I think back to that drive from Indiana. And the reason I went under, one of the reasons I went under, was I had a little bit of a thought that maybe this game plays out like Notre Dame, Ohio State in 2022. When Marcus Freeman, in his first game as a head coach of Notre Dame, kind of played it not to get blown out, and they lost 21-10. They covered. And, you know, the discussion after that game was like, wow, Notre Dame might be in pretty good shape. And then they lost to Marshall the next week. That drive by Indiana down 31-7 was pretty telling to me. No urgency, running the ball, letting the clock kind of run. And it almost felt like they were doing it to make it a respectable final score. And they got the touchdown. They got the two-point conversion. At that point, once the two-point conversion went in, I knew I was cooked on the under. I had three. I had 51.5, 52, and 53.5. So I guess one of them came home. But on the pot, it was 51.5. And then you get the situation where Ryan Day, after Travion Henderson slides down at the goal line, decides to sneak it in. Let's start with Ohio State first. I was on with Adam Schein on VSiN a couple weeks ago, and he asked me who's the biggest challenge to Oregon. And without hesitation, I said, Ohio State. I think Ohio State is loaded. Now, losing Seth McLaughlin is not ideal for the center position, but I think Ohio State, and the odds would bear it out, I think they're the best team in the country. I don't want to, I think they have a chance to certainly win the national championship, but that was dominant. And the defense is the thing that I've continued to be more impressed about. I love Jim Knowles. When they made the hire, I thought it was brilliant to get him from Oklahoma State. I think the defense is what ultimately carries the water here for Ohio State. But I'm curious, you as an Ohio State fan, and let's be honest, a big skeptic of Ryan Day, think of your Buckeyes heading into the Michigan game.
Well, let's start with this. Annoying at the beginning, right? Another slow start, quick three and out. Indiana goes right down the field on them. So that was irritating. And if that's going to happen against Oregon in the Big Ten championship game, it's going to be a problem. That being said, it was talked about a lot on the broadcast how much Ohio State has changed defensively in terms of getting after the quarterback since the Oregon game. And they had 15 sacks. They have 15 sacks in four games here this month. And I think, and this was kind of reported in the Ohio State message board circles and all those kinds of things. So of course, grains of salt everywhere, whole shaker of salt, one of the big ass grinders, whatever, that there's some dysfunction and some dissension between Larry Johnson, the defensive line coach, and Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator. And that Ryan Day initially was kind of partial towards Johnson, a guy who's been in the program a long time, you know, kind of sealed the deal with the Bosa brothers, Chase Young, some of these other guys that have come in and played on the defensive line. But it's just not the way that Knowles' scheme is designed to run. And they kept saying on the broadcast, you know, Joel Klatt specifically, that, you know, Ryan Day went to the defensive coaches and was like, look, this needs to change. Certainly seems as though it's changed, because they harassed Curtis Rourke in this game in a very big way. And I think that's what Ohio State needs to do, because Caleb Downs is an elite player, but Denzel Burke has been bad and Igbinosin hasn't been very good either. So Ohio State needs to pressure the quarterback. That's something that they absolutely have to do. And they did in this game. And the other adjustment that I think needs to be made is in the short yardage situations, when they were in the red zone, they were inside the five, they were inside the 10, the offensive line was not getting a push. The offensive line's been the problem all year. And now with McLaughlin out, you're not getting that push on the inside, right? So you get the turnover on downs on that first high percentage scoring chance in the red zone. They kind of figured it out afterwards with some of them. But still, this is a problem. This is a team that needs to throw the football on third and short. They need to move Howard, throw the ball, use their talent on the outside to get open, because it's going to be hard for them to get 1, 2, 3 yards when everything's bunched up at the line of scrimmage. So that's an adjustment that Chip Kelly needs to make. All of that being said, two takeaways from me. One, Will Howard is much better than I thought he was. And two, Indiana has no business being in the college football playoff. Those were my two big takeaways. I think Howard is exceeding my expectations. And you could say, okay, well, he's got Smith and Igbuka and, you know, Carnell Tate's breaking out, all that. Howard just makes, for the most part, smart decisions. They've used his legs more in the second half of the season, which is a good thing to see and something they're going to need to do as they go forward. I think Ohio State is the best team in the country. I think it's because of how that defense is playing. And I think it's because of how Will Howard runs this offense.
What's the line next week? 3.5 for Ohio State against Oregon? They were laying, what, 3 at Oregon,
right?
And they lost. And now it'll be on a neutral.
Quasi-neutral.
Yeah, quasi-neutral. That's a good point.
I mean, it's 2 hours from Columbus.
Does the Duck show up, though? The Duck
in the
river.
I'm sure he does.
Look, I said it, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back because it wasn't that hot of a take. But I said Ohio State and Oregon were going to split their series. I didn't know who would win at Eugene, but I said whoever won at Eugene would lose in Indianapolis. And I'm not going to waver from that. I think Ohio State wins that game. The loser of that game will be the 5 seed. And I don't think it's better to be the 5 seed than the 1. However, the way it's shaping up, the loser of Ohio State, Oregon is going to get the 5 seed. They're going to play the Big 12 champion, or if Boise State loses, Tulane. And then you're going to get the Big 12 champion or Boise State in the next round. Like, we're more than likely going to get a third go-round of Ohio State and Oregon in the semifinals. It's a very good chance that it's going to play out, assuming, once again, that, well, I guess it doesn't matter, because I think Ohio State would fall to the 5, even if they were to lose that game. So I want to get to the Indiana thing where you said they had no business being in the playoff. I would tend to agree. However, they're going to get in because they're going to.
Are they?
I think so, because, and we'll find out tonight, right? The thing I mentioned, I think I mentioned on the podcast, I know I mentioned on Gil's show, because there was a price out there on Indiana to miss the playoff at plus 270. And I said all week, if you think Indiana's going to get blown out, it's worth a bet. The problem is Bama lost and Ole Miss lost. They now have 3 losses. So I think process of elimination, Indiana, I think, probably hangs on to like the 11 or 12 seed, depending on the auto bids. I think they get in, and I think it's an early exit. And I think if you're facing Indiana, you're pretty happy about your opponent that you're going to face. So my question is this. Indiana, prior to the Michigan game, had covered 8 straight games and had covered by like 21 points per game. They're playing the corpse of Purdue at home night game. Kirk Cignetti is an arrogant you-know-what. I don't think they're going to stop scoring. And I don't think Purdue is really going to lead that much resistance. So, like, I don't think I've laid more than, God, I don't know, 11. I think the most I laid this year was whatever Colorado was laying against Utah. It's already through 28. Like, Adam, if you're Indiana, you go to DraftKings and take that, you know, scroll and go all the way to the alt highest and play that, because Indiana has to win this game by like 95 points.
And they could. I mean, I have it power rated 33, so I thought the market was cheap anyway. Yeah, I mean, if you're Kurt Cignetti, like, you have to at this point, right? And you saw,
they're,
you mentioned
it
already, you saw the preservation aspect of this for Indiana, right? The punt around like midfield. I mean, they weren't going to win the game anyway, but it was one of those things where, you know, they were just trying to hang out, right? The fourth,
Adam,
and 11 at
final,
Ohio State's 43.
Their final touchdown drive took 7 minutes in the fourth quarter, down by 24.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And look, I mean, so then there's,
I mean, I'm not blaming them for it. I get it, right? It's a beauty contest, and 31-15 looks a lot better than 31-7 or 38-15, which is what ended up being the final score.
Right. And look, I mean, there's a couple of questions here then, right? Like, what is the College Football Playoff Selection Committee thinking? Right? Are they trusting the metrics here, or is somebody in that room going to go, look at what they tried to do? Do we really want to reward this? Do we really want to let it be known that we're okay with you trying to minimize your loss on the scoreboard by not actually playing to try to win the game? They weren't going to win the game anyway, but by not actually trying to win the game. Here's the other thing, and I go back to this every single year, and I wrote about this over at VSiN.com on Sunday morning, where I projected the College Football Playoff rankings top 25 and kind of talked about what happened over the weekend and all of that. Remember, you mentioned it already. This is a beauty contest, right? This is about what creates the most money possible for the NCAA, all of the sponsors, all of the TV networks, everybody who is involved, everybody who has a hand in all of this, right? If Alabama beats Auburn, and they should, they're a double-digit favorite, although it hasn't been pretty for the Crimson Tide, is it really that hard to put a three-loss Alabama team in over an Indiana team that is a college basketball brand, but not a college football brand? Because you can look at this and you can say, look at all of these teams in the SEC that have been ranked in the top 25 in the College Football Playoff. Missouri sucks, and they've been in the College Football Playoff ranking pretty much the whole time, right? South Carolina is one of the best three-loss teams in the country, and the discussion would be very interesting if the refs hadn't screwed them out of the game against LSU earlier on in the year.
That's a fun game this weekend, by the way.
But I think, Clemson. Oh, it's a huge game. Then we can talk about it in a second.
South Carolina, Clemson.
But I just think that if you have the ability to manipulate the metrics, manipulate the narrative, whatever it is that you want to do, what generates more money, Tim? Alabama in the final 12 or Indiana in the final 12?
I totally hear what you're saying. I think they put Indiana in over Alabama with three losses, over Tennessee with three losses. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's what I believe to happen.
Over Ole Miss?
Over Ole Miss, excuse me. Yeah, Tennessee.
Tennessee could have three losses because Diego Pavia is a Goliath slayer himself.
Another cover as an underdog last week against LSU. On this real quickly is the committee, for whatever reason, has loved the Big Ten. What was the top five this week? Number one, Oregon. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Texas. Number four, Penn State. Number five, Indiana. What?
And Indiana has not played Penn State. They have not played Oregon. They haven't even played USC.
I agree with all of that. I'm just pointing out, I think because of the law, if Alabama and Ole Miss had taken care of business, Indiana, I think, would be out. I think they keep them in because they don't want to set a precedent of a one-loss team being ahead of a three-team. I'm not saying that's the way I should. Look, there's a difference, I think, between, and I all your points are valid. And I was listening to, I think it was Russillo and McShay, talk about Indiana and where they have them ranked. I agree with it all. I think Alabama is better than Indiana. I think Ole Miss is better than Indiana. But it's going to be hard for them to put a three-loss team over a one-loss Power 5 team. They did it last year, bumping out Florida State. I don't think they'll do it this year. I think Indiana gets the final at-large seed, but we'll see how it plays out. We will.
I mean, can they go into the hypothetical and be like, look, Indiana is a 6-6 team in the SEC. Like,
they could.
Something that they are willing to do?
I don't
because
think they will.
I just, again, like, and first of all, I'm going to fade Indiana almost no matter who they play.
By the way, just real quickly, Alabama, you lost by three fucking touchdowns to Oklahoma. Oklahoma's not good.
Right, you're not wrong.
I think Alabama's better. And I know there's going to be a lot of belly aching on the Feinbaum show when Indiana does get in inevitably over an Alabama or an Ole Miss. But like,
super random hypothetical. What if South Carolina beats Clemson by three touchdowns?
I think South Carolina is
that a three-loss SEC team that goes in over Indiana? That win is dramatically better than anything Indiana has.
There's no. I mean, Alabama beat Georgia. Right? I mean, Tennessee, or excuse, I keep saying Tennessee, Ole Miss beat Georgia. Like, these two teams have a much better win than Indiana. There's no denying it. I'm trying to look at it from what we're going to see as opposed to what I think we should see, right? And that's the difference with this whole thing. And we'll find out tonight because they dropped BYU 8 or 9 spots.
Well, losing, they crushed BYU. Yeah.
Which you knew they wanted to do.
Yep.
And BYU beat SMU in SMU. It's a good win. Georgia dropped, 8 spots? I mean, Georgia, not that anyone gives a shit, but like, my God, Georgia, man. They've got wins on the road at Texas, beat the shit out of Clemson on a neutral, and beat Tennessee. They lost to Ole Miss in Alabama, and they didn't look pretty in either one of those. Georgia should be higher than Notre Dame, in my opinion. And Notre Dame's crushing teams, and yes, I'm a Notre Dame fan, but I think Georgia, and they will if they win the SEC. They'll jump Notre Dame, and they'll get one of those byes. But I guess I want to wrap on a couple things here. Indiana, alt line at DraftKings, minus 39 is plus 230. Do they put up like a 56 spot on Purdue?
I mean, they should. If they want to try to remove as much doubt as possible, they absolutely should.
I would agree. How do you feel about this weekend with your boys laying 3 touchdowns against Michigan?
I know what I want. I mean, I want the, you know, why'd you go for 2? Because I couldn't go for 3 Woody Hayes type of mentality here. I don't know that we're going to get it. But, I mean, look, it's, they are so dramatically better than Michigan. It's just not even remotely close. So, I mean, you see the number that's out there, right? You know, 3 touchdown favorite here. This should be letting out 3 years worth of frustration, but at the same time, that offensive line is not good. It's hard to cover big numbers in the NFL, college football, whatever the case may be, when you are not very good in the trenches. And Ohio State's not very good in the trenches right now. So I'm clearly not going to bet Michigan because I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't take a hot enough shower. I'd have third-degree burns, wouldn't even cover it. But I would be more inclined to think that Ohio State doesn't cover. What, but they damn well better.
I did a segment on the Tailgate Show on Saturday basically saying, be careful. Be careful. And look, I lumped in Notre Dame in the be careful. They won easily. I lumped in SMU. I was on the wrong side of that. I had Virginia. Woo, was I wrong there? SMU, good job. But Alabama lost. Ole Miss lost. Texas didn't cover. Penn State, good God, barely beat Minnesota. Is there a team that you would say be careful this week? Before you answer that, I'll give you mine. It's Miami. Kyle McCord, your boy, he could put up some yards, man. And they're catching double digits at the dome. I think Syracuse makes it uncomfortable for Miami. And Miami's got the capabilities of blowing them out. They're the better team, there's no doubt. But I like what I've seen from an offensive standpoint in Syracuse. And I had UConn last week, was very fortunate to get the backdoor cover there with the Huskies. Syracuse at their peak offensively can sling it, man. And McCord lives dangerously. He throw a lot of picks, but like, be careful. You already know you're in the ACC championship. Well, I guess not technically. If they were to lose, Clemson would get in. I would just be careful, Miami. You already lost to Georgia Tech. I like the Cuse here catching 11.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Miami's defense is bad. It's so bad. I mean, Cam Ward has hit so many deficiencies for that team that, like, I don't know. I mean, I understand the Travis Hunter hype, right? I guess I get it, but I don't know, man. 14-1 is disrespectful to Cam Ward when he's carried that football team this season. There's no question about that. Yeah, I'll throw one out there. Not as sexy. Nothing I do is all that sexy. Nevada and UNLV.
Ooh.
UNLV laying 17.5 here with everything to lose. potentially. Now, they should still get in if Colorado State loses, because then it goes to the computers and the metrics and all that. UNLV is going to have a better case. But Nevada's actually played a lot better throughout the course of the season.
They're frisky, man.
Than I expected they would be. I think Reno comes down here and covers the 17.5. I don't think they win, but I think they cover the 17.5.
All right, last one before we get out of here. I do the sandwich spot of the week. I think the sandwich spot of the week, and it's always tricky when you're talking about an armed service, an academy. This is a tricky spot for Army. I don't know how much of the game you watched on Saturday night between Notre Dame and Army, but Notre Dame beat the crap out of Bryson Daly, and he was already not healthy. And they were hitting hard. And, you know, I put this stat out last week, which was teams who have played Notre Dame, they are 0-8 ATS the following week, 0-9-1 if you include teams who had a bye week. Now, you could just make an argument, the teams that Notre Dame have played just suck, which is a fair argument. But Notre Dame's a physical team. That was a physical game. And UTSA, man, Jeff Traylor's bunch is playing better. And Army knows they're in the AAC championship game next week against Tulane. They still have the Navy game. I guess there's an outside chance they could get in the playoff, but I think that's all but done after losing by 4-5 touchdowns. I think this is a tricky spot. I took the points with Army here, or excuse me, with UTSA here on Saturday at West Point.
Hey, UTSA in their three games here in the month of November, 7.03 yards per play. Now, that's the thing when you look at an Army game, right? Is the offense going to be efficient enough with a potential limited number of possessions to put up numbers? And I think the answer is yes. I think UTSA can absolutely do that. I saw Owen McCown had like a 76-yard touchdown run last week for UTSA.
While Temple's AD was on the air talking about how, you know, things are going to change at Temple.
Dude, they're talking about like dropping down to FCS. Like their athletic director is very serious about how bad this football program is. I mean, I can't blame him, but for UTSA, I mean, 44-36 over Memphis, 48-27 over North Texas, 51 against Temple last week. The only thing stopping them is they played an awful second half against they. Well, that was a weird game, right? Because they led that game 35-7 at halftime, and they got outscored 22-3 in the fourth quarter. So I don't know what the hell happened in that football game. But you know, they played one bad half really over the last month and a half. So I think UTSA is very dangerous. Traylor's an excellent head coach, as you mentioned. You know, Army with Bryson Daly's health concerns. UTSA 6-0 at home, 0-5 straight up on the road this year.
Ooh.
So that's a weird look. I guess they like the Alamo Dome.
I guess so. And Mikey Stadium, I haven't looked at the weather. Could be a little weather could always be a funky thing there on the banks of the Hudson. But I guess the one bet I'll put in now, and I'll talk about it more tomorrow with Wes Reynolds, give me East Carolina on the money line. Also, give me the Cuse plus the 11, and certainly we'll have a bunch more games. I like that Nevada angle. I like that one. I think UNLV, you know, I talked about a lot last week. That pressure starts to set in, right? And Nevada is going to come down just trying to ruin your season. And we didn't talk about it. I'm going to Notre Dame USC. I'm terrified of that game. USC is going to try to ruin their rival's season. You know, going to get a lot of that this week. So I like that Nevada angle. Might have to look more into that. Wolfpack.
I got one more I want to throw out there for you.
Give me it.
Because in my power ratings, it's a wrong team favorite situation. It's Jacksonville State and Western Kentucky. So Western Kentucky is 1.5 favorite. I have Jacksonville State -1.5 in my power ratings. Here's the problem. Jacksonville State already clinched a spot in the Conference USA Championship game next week, and they're hosting it because they have a two-game lead in the division or in the conference. So keep that in mind here, too, where you are going to get some of these games where, like, I think Jacksonville State's clearly a better team than Western Kentucky, but do you bother playing Tyler Huff in this game? I mean, you know, do you really care about this football game?
And you're not, and you have no shot of making the
no
college football playoff. I did this last year with Jacksonville State against New Mexico State because I think New Mexico State had already clinched a spot in the CUSA title. And I'm like, Diego Pavia is not going to play. He did. And New Mexico State won and covered. But I think those are the types of angles you look at because, well, one thing to note, let me just double check this as I'm doing it on the fly. All right, that's good. So Liberty, Sam Houston State is at the same time because Western Kentucky just lost to Liberty. Western Kentucky needs to win and I think needs
and get help.
And yeah. Sam Houston State, I believe, has to beat Liberty. I have to look into the tiebreaker.
Yeah,
situation.
Because Western Kentucky beat Sam Houston straight up.
Okay,
so
there you go.
So they need Liberty
to
lose.
They need the Bearcats with a K. They need the Bearcats with a K to win at home against Liberty, and they need to win that game. But yeah, I think Western Kentucky certainly worth a look there in that spot. I like that.
Well, and then this is a really good thing. I'm glad you brought this up because I need to look at this. The Big 12 and the timing of all the games there, because you have 4 teams at 6-2, you have 5 teams at 5-3. There's actually a possibility, I think, that like Baylor, Texas Tech or something could be the Big 12 championship game.
Let me clear something up.
It's a mess.
I misspoke. So I want to clear something up before we get out of here. So the game that you mentioned, Jacksonville State, Western Kentucky, is played on Saturday. Liberty Sam Houston State is played on Friday.
There you go.
Okay, so please don't bet that game yet. See what happens in Liberty Sam Houston State. I would say, Adam, if Sam Houston State wins that game, Western Kentucky might be an absolute slam spot with them trying to get to the championship game.
You would think so. Yeah, and then if Liberty wins, on the flip side, Western Kentucky is playing for absolutely nothing on Saturday.
And they're already bowl eligible, so yeah.
Right.
Keep that in mind. Look at all the times and dates. There's a lot of unique angles on the final Saturday of the regular season. Adam, as always, much appreciated, sir. Make sure to check out VSiN.com. And before we get out of here, Friday is a great day to go shopping, and we've got a pretty good deal going on over at VSiN.com.
Yes, sir, we do. Black Friday special. $60, all access pass through May 1st, gives you access to everything that we do, all of our written content, all of our proprietary betting tools. Not only that, our college football playoff betting guide will come out December 12th. We'll have bowl game previews up for every game with at least 48 or 72 hours lead time. We're still deciding on that because, you know, everybody opts out of the bowl games now, so we don't want to put that content out too early. But yeah, you know, through May 1st. I mean, we're talking Super Bowl betting guide, all of the prop bets and all those things that we do in the lead up, March Madness betting guide, one of our biggest of the year. We do all of our conference tournament previews over at VSiN.com as well. So, hey, $60 through May 1st, you're getting a hell of a lot of bang for your buck. So check that out over at VSiN.com/subscribe.
Give our podcast a follow, a rate, and a review. Just a reminder, it's a safe way to talk to your aunts and uncles this Thanksgiving. Tell them about the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. We're back tomorrow with Wes Reynolds. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.